everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry. As we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager, your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil with the Voyager Bridge background.
Yes, I do. House. I'm trying to sit kind of where I would be sitting, but it's, you know, a little, the perspective's off. But I wore a matching sweater with the carpet, so.
Is that?
Yeah. You know, I want the sweater to match the carpet, as they say.
You're really going to go down that avenue.
I just
right
said
now?
The okay. sweater matches that carpet of the bridge.
But you know what you were inferring. You know the.
You know
the
what? I played
message,
Tom
the
Paris.
Meaning.
I played the rascal Tom Paris on Star Trek Voyager. I get to make carpet and sweater jokes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So when you get rascally, can I refer to you as, can I say
the rascal?
I can say, are you being season 1 and 2 Tom Paris right now? This will be my way of saying you're being a bit rascally. So what's new in the world of McNeil?
Well, I'm finishing, getting close to the end of my Turner and Hooch, you know, producing and directing. I'm directing 2 of these last 3 episodes. So it's keeping me very busy doing big car chase sequence in this episode. So that's fun because we get what's called a Russian arm, which is the kind of usually a Mercedes or a Porsche with a camera, remote camera on the top that drives around for all the sliding and the car chase. And we have a drone chasing and we've got a T-bone crash. It's a big stunt sequence. It'll be fun. So that's exciting.
Reminds me of all the stunt sequences you did on Chuck. You know, you guys had a lot of stuff there. Big stuff for TV, right?
For TV, that was big. Yeah. And we were kind of a low budget show. So it always had to be very inventive what we did with stunts.
Got you. Now, here's the other question. So then you're going to go on hiatus, right?
Then I go on hiatus and I go back to Utah to my new home. And and I'm getting married. Getting married. I know.
You're all over the place.
I'm a very busy
you're doing
man.
This. You're a very busy man. You have so much on your plate.
And I still find time to match the sweater to the carpet. Okay.
Are all your vehicles with you in Vancouver right now?
Or do you have that many vehicles? I have liquidated. I have liquidated a lot of vehicles. What I own now is the RV, my motorhome, which I love, and my Tesla Model 3. 2018 Tesla Model 3. That's it. I sold both my motorcycles. I sold my Explorer. I sold my Mini Cooper Countryman. I have a motorhome and a Tesla. That's it.
You're kind of footloose and fancy free. I need to know which Model 3 do you have? There's a long distance one, a performance. What do you have?
I have the dual motor. Mm-hmm. So it's a little more performancey, all-wheel drive, good, better traction. The dual motor, Model 3, yes, with the long distance, the bigger battery range, the autopilot. Yeah, I kind of got all the perks on that one, so at the time.
So that's the faster 0 to 60? Because, you know, depending on which model, you have a slower 0 to 60 number or a little faster.
It was the fastest at the time. There has been a software upgrade that you can purchase that they'll download the software upgrade for like $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000. I forget what it is. And it will take it from like the 3.7 seconds to 2.9 or something. I could get it to go faster if I want to spend a few thousand dollars, but it's fast enough for me. It's super fast. I'm not
three point something seconds in 0 to 60 is fast.
It's super fast. You feel it.
That's already, it's light speedish in a way for us humans, right? So I think that's good enough.
It's great.
Yeah, I was just looking at the Tesla website. There's a they have a plaid model. Like you can get a Model S plaid, plaid plus or whatever. And it's less than 2 seconds to 0 to 60.
Oh my God.
Blows my mind. I mean, I think accidents will be much more prevalent with people with that model. I mean, if you're going that fast.
That's very fast.
I don't know. All right. This week's episode, it's the big Tom and Harry episode.
Yes, it is.
The shoot.
I'm so excited. I was waiting for you to say it. I was like, say the title. Say it. Say the title. Why isn't he saying the title?
Say the title, damn it.
Yeah, the shoot.
Yeah, I apologize, everybody, if I'm a little bit slower. I had a nice fall on the ice about a week ago and smacked my head really hard. So if my synapses aren't firing and I can't come up with titles or names as well as I normally do, I'm going to blame it on the ice is what I'm going to say. But the
blame
shoot.
Blame it on the ice.
On the ice.
Blame it on the ice. Blame it on the ice. I felt like that was a cue for a song or something.
I feel like we need to add more song to our podcast. Yeah. It's just something that people really enjoy, music and song. And you're good at just coming up with random lyrics out of the blue.
I'm a creative songwriter. I just kind of, you know, riff.
You riff on it for sure. Which is really
I riff on the songs. I riff all on the songs. I make up all the words and sing them all day long. That's why I love to sing. It's one of my favorite things. Okay. Anyway,
you know, Robbie.
Go.
After we upload this particular episode,
yes.
If we lose a large percentage of subscribers, we will stop the singing immediately.
Yes.
Exactly. I don't think so, though. I think we're going to gain people. I think people are going to be excited about this.
For the songwriting.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, we're going to follow
podcast. Our... new podcast, Songwriting with Robbie Duncan McNeil.
McNeil.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think that would. I don't think. Yeah.
You guys know our normal format. So Robbie and I are going to head off and watch the show. We haven't seen this episode in quite some time, and we're going to come back and discuss the shoot.
All right. See you soon.
See you soon. All right. So we are back from watching the shoot.
How exciting was that?
Robbie, I'm going to change the name of the episode from the shoot to the sweat.
I know. It was very,
we were so sweaty.
I mean, I think I at one point I said to Rebecca, I was like, I wonder if I was really sweating or if that was like makeup, because sometimes it looked like they had sprayed us down with, like, they used to use those Evian bottles, the mister, and they would spray us down when we were supposed to be sweaty. So I think that's what they did.
I do recall exactly what they did. They did spray us down. It wasn't necessarily with water. It was like a mixture of like glycerin, something else that wouldn't evaporate as quickly as water, right? So with the hot studio lights, if they had just did an Evian mister, that would have evaporated so quickly. So they used some chemical form of water mixed with something else, which then produced our fake sweat.
It looked good. The whole set looked good. The whole episode looked really good. Les did a great job directing. The lighting was really dramatic.
Lots of shadows and lots of, dramatic lighting. Definitely. Let's start off with our haiku and our limerick.
Our poetry synopses. Okay.
Yes.
Here's my haiku. Very impressionistic, you may say. Okay, here we go. So a haiku, 5 syllables, 7 syllables, 5 syllables. So here we go. Akrotirians. Tom and Harry in prison. The manifesto. Akrotirians.
Wow.
Tom and Harry in prison. The manifesto. I think there's so much to capture in this episode that I had to get the manifesto.
Difficult.
There.
Now you know, now that you've done haiku for a few episodes, it's not as easy as you would think. It's actually, I think the limerick gives you a little bit more freedom to describe what's happening, because the haiku is so brief that you're only able to get the essence. You know, Akrotirians already takes up 5 syllables itself, right?
Akrotirians. One word, bam.
Akrotirians. Yep, that's right. That's all done. Okay, Here we go. Straight from Ireland. Here's your limerick. All right. The shoot right. Limerick. Tom and Harry are accused of a terrorist plot. To a dark, dank prison they are sent to rot. Tom loses a knife bout. Harry finds a way out. Janeway saves the boys. Jackpot.
Nice. Nice.
All righty, buddy.
That was good. I like the limerick. They're fun.
Can I just first talk about how difficult it was to shoot this episode? We were on stage 16, and they built that entire prison set on stage 16.
Yep.
And they included a lot of, they brought in a lot of dirt, and just, there was just a lot of just stuff in the air, like dirt and residue and dust. They pumped in the fake smoke, which, you know, back in the day, I don't think they use the smoke that they use with us any longer. I think that stuff is so toxic, that oil-based smoke that they would pump in there.
Right,
So my recollection was that 4/5 of the cast and crew developed bronchitis.
Wow.
From this episode. I got sick as a dog. I know other, maybe you didn't. Maybe you,
remember.
You avoided the bronchitis bug.
But I remember, now that you mentioned that, I do remember an episode where everybody got sick. I also remember an episode, sidebar, where I got the chicken pox right around the holidays.
Oh my gosh.
I thought I had chicken pox. I'd never had the chicken pox, I guess. It was right around Christmas, like the week before Christmas. I was not feeling well.
Oh,
because my kid, Taylor, got chicken pox at school, brought it home. I guess I'd never had it. I got it, but I'd been to work feeling kind of rotten. And I guess I passed it on to two of our crew members. So right around Christmas, I had the chicken pox. My kid had the chicken pox. And two of our adult crew members had the chicken pox. So I do remember that. I think Billy Pete's might have been one of them. And that's dangerous, by the way, to get chicken pox as an adult. So
I vaguely remember this. Yeah, you were patient zero, but I vaguely remember that story. But I do remember this episode. Almost everyone got bronchitis. It was just ridiculous. And I called this a blood, sweat, and tears episode because there was fake sweat and real sweat. There was blood in that. There was a scene. I think they might have cut it out, but I come down the stairs or that metal steps or the railing or whatever, and I tripped. I don't think you were on set when this happened, but I tripped and fell and I hit my knee against one of the steps, like the metal stairs, and I cut my knee open. So
ouch.
That was very painful.
I do remember this being a rough set, like you described.
Oh God.
I remember those little cubicles had very low ceilings in the tiny little cubicle. And I remember hitting my head a few times
because
I noticed as I was doing the whole thing with the clamp that we had in our heads that was kind of making us crazy in the store. I remember when I was filming hitting my head a couple of times and being like, oh my God, my head. I was doing this a lot because it was just a rough set to work in, for sure.
Rough, but truly the whole, I mean, I've never worked on a project where almost everyone got sick. And it was like an episode of Oprah, like you get bronchitis, you can have bronchitis. I mean, everybody from in front and behind the camera got ill during the filming of this episode.
Right.
So, and the cutting of cutting open my knee didn't really help. And as we see from the teaser scene, it's Kim falling into the prison and he summarily gets beaten up by all the prisoners. And
there was some good stunty fight stuff in this episode, I have to say. And I saw Tom Morga's face, one of our regular stunt men. Mm-hmm. I saw Tom a couple times, which was nice to see his face.
Yeah.
I love the whole like bouncing, throwing you around. And then at the end, you get tossed down or you get pushed towards me. And I look at you for a minute and then I punch you. And at this point, when we were rewatching, I'm like, why am I hitting Harry? Like, I thought this was supposed to, my memory was, this was the episode where we were buddies.
Yeah.
And why am I hitting him? And your poor face, you look like, why, Tom? Why?
Well, when we were watching that scene where I get thrown towards you and there's that moment before anything happens where I see you and you see me.
Yeah.
And it's the calm before the storm. And right when we see that interaction between the two of us, Megan goes, "You guys are going to kiss." And then you end up punching me, and I go, "No, that wasn't a kiss.
That was a kiss with a fist.
It was a fisticuss." And I'll be honest, I don't remember that either. I don't remember you punching me.
I didn't remember that was the story. I'm like, what the heck? Yeah.
But clearly that was a strategy, right?
It was all part of a cover, trying to play it off like it was the cover.
Yeah.
But I didn't remember it at this point in the rewatch. I will have to say, every time they talked about, so this is an Ocratirian prison. We find out that we are convicted of some kind of terrorist bombing. But every time, I got to say, every time they say the word Ocratirian, I hear Beltran or Ethan Phillips or the whole gang that would tease you about the girl that you had the crush on, who had the line, "The Ocratirians would never do that." And so I laughed. It was hard for me to pay attention to this episode because they kept saying the word Ocratirians, and I kept hearing the joke, the teasing of "the Ocratirians would never do that" line reading.
Robbie,
that we did.
We're gonna bring her on as a guest. We're going to have to like settle this. We have to bring her on, and I'm sure she'll definitely come on as a guest, but yes, you're right. And I knew that you would bring this up. I said, every time I heard that Ocratirian, I said, Robbie's going to talk about this. He's going to talk about the Ocratirians would never do that.
We should get everybody like Beltran and Ethan Phillips and even Picardo and Kate Mulgrew just to do their best version of "the Ocratirians would never do that." And just kind of put them up for the fans and have everybody vote on who gives the best line reading of "the Ocratirians would never do that." Because, you know, that line was famous with our cast.
Yes, it was.
That became a very popular line. Anyway. Yeah.
At my expense, of course.
Yes, of course. We had to bring that.
During the credits showing all the names of all the guest stars, one of the guest stars' name happened to be Beans Morocco.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
who was Beans? What an awesome name. Beans Morocco is the guy that steals our shelter. Remember, after you get stabbed, we go back to the shelter, and then the guy, I'm like, "Get out of, that's our little hut." And he's like, "It's mine." And he's like, that's Beans Morocco.
Beans Morocco.
Yeah, what a great name.
That's a great name. It sounds like some like Pirates of the Caribbean name. Like the whole,
yes, it does.
I gotta say also, the whole style of this prison barge, mm-hmm. it felt like we were on an episode of the Pirates of the Caribbean Go to Space or something. It felt very Pirates of the Caribbean's in space.
You know, I don't know if you felt or if you noticed this, but the main mm-hmm. bad guy, I guess, yeah. Pitts is his name, you know?
Yeah.
Every time I watched him, and with that little headband thing he had on, I just kept thinking of 80s, you know, "Let's get physical.
Oh, yeah.
I kept thinking like, this guy's about to lead like an aerobics class or something. That headband really bothered me. So Beans Morocco, you know, we can start coming up with other names where the first name is a vegetable and the last name is a country, right? So
interesting.
It could be like artichoke, Zambia, like that, you know, like that, or artichoke, Nigeria, something like that.
Right.
This could be a thing.
Okay.
Just throwing it out there.
Okay.
I mean, if you're gonna go and get everyone to do the Ocratirians would never do that rendition, then I can come up with vegetable country names.
I like it.
The director is, of course, we talked about this a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. It is Mr. Les Landau. Mm-hmm. Teleplay by Ken Biller, but the story is by Clavon C. Harris. And I remember specifically the openings when we're in our little hut for the first time, that opening, that first time that you see Paris and Kim in the shelter.
Right.
That is when all the other Voyager actors that wanted to direct other than myself were observing us.
Right.
And they were sitting next to Les, and in the beginning they were behaving, but halfway through They were cracking up, joking, laughing, loud. And to be perfectly honest, you didn't get pissed off. I did. Because I said, look, guys, this is a serious scene. We're supposed to be, you know, we're all messed up here. We've got this aggravation. And maybe that actually probably helped my acting, because I was annoyed aggravated with my fellow co-stars. Yes, yeah. I truly was annoyed with Bacardo, Roxanne Dawson, and Tim Russ.
I do remember that.
Doing their thing.
And I do remember, like, because I had been the one who had directed, I felt like, well, I don't want to tell them that they're being a little loud or distracting, because it'll seem like I'm telling them they shouldn't be direct. Like, I'm trying to undermine their directing aspirations. So I was like, crap, I can't tell them that I actually think it's being distracting, because it's going to seem like, you know, I don't want them to direct. But yeah. It was awkward.
Hey, but good thing you had me there, because I walked right up to them and I told them, I said, I said, what the hell are you guys doing? You think if this was your scene and it was totally serious and it was a big dramatic scene, that I would sit next to the director and start cracking up and making jokes and completely distracting you and messing up your take? I was so pissed. And they did. Mm. They shut up after that. They were like, oops, you know, so... So I got to be the bad guy. I could be the bad cop in that instance.
Good
for you.
So let's see. So we find out that we were put into this prison. You tell me how you were, you know, tried and then convicted. And I say exact same thing happened to me. Mm-hmm. We're accused of a trilithium bomb in the Latvia recreational facility that killed 47 people. And this is we come to learn this is a terrorist group called Open Skies, that is doing this, and they think the trilithium bomb is because of Voyager, because we have dilithium power sources, and so that's how they make that connection. Obviously, it's not. Obviously, we didn't do that, but they say get out of here, and the captain decides to leave for now to figure things out. But as she's sort of chased out by these two ships, these Ocraterian ships, I noticed they look a lot like the Delta Flyer shuttle.
Yeah.
Like the shape and everything. I was like, wait a minute. That looks like two Delta Flyer shuttles escorting us out. Maybe a little bigger than the Delta Flyer, but I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, very streamlined like the Delta Flyer. You're right about that. And what did you say the recreational facility was that the bombing took place? It sounded like you said Latvian.
Latvia.
Okay. Not to be confused.
Latvia.
Latvia, yeah. Not to be confused with Latvia, the country Latvia.
So no.
We don't want to offend any of our Latvian fans that are listening to
this. No, we don't want to offend Beans Latvia.
No, and Latvia really does sound like...
Didn't get
you know,
my joke, Garrett. It was Beans Latvia.
What did you just say?
I just said we don't want to offend
Beans Latvia.
Latvia, yes. Because it's a vegetable in a country. Okay.
But you need a different vegetable than beans. Give me something different than beans.
Cucumber Latvia.
We will not offend Cucumber Latvia. You know why I did not catch the joke immediately? Because when you said Latvia, it just sounded like Activia.
Is
that what it is?
That's what I wrote down. Laktivia. Laktivia. So it's kind of like a yogurt
for lactose intolerant people. What it is.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's what the recreation facility that we were accused of destroying, because we hate lactose. Okay.
We're
lactose intolerant that we blow up recreational facilities. We cannot tolerate anything that even sounds like lactose, much less eating it. It makes us gassy.
Did you know
and
that
terrorists?
Okay. Did you know that Beans is actually only a nickname for Beans Morocco?
Oh, yeah.
His full name is Soybean. It's Soybean Morocco
is what
it is.
I have heard that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's Open Sky as opposed to Open Skies.
I think it is Open Sky.
You're right. Plural. Yeah.
Yes. I did.
Which then made me think maybe this should be a t-shirt for the Delta Flyers. Open Sky. Ooh. You know, something kind of cool with Open Sky.
They're terrorists though. I don't know if
we don't have to put terrorists on the shirt.
Yeah, let's not put any make a t-shirt that says
terrorism or bomb
I'm gonna guess that we're never gonna do that would be bad. Okay, good.
Just leave it with Open Sky. All right.
Yeah. So I tell you that we're 300 meters underground and there's 50 other prisoners here. So, which surprised me because I remembered as we started watching this, I remembered that it was actually a spaceship we were on. So I was like, how can anybody believe that this is underground? Like it just, and maybe that's because I already knew, but do you think does it appear like we're underground? Maybe that's because the chute is supposed to feel like it's coming
from. Yeah, because of the chute. So up until that point, everyone thinks it's underground, you know? And I think that was the big reveal when Kim climbs up, you know, and figures out, oh my gosh, it's not underground.
Maybe I knew that. I did remember
that. Because you already knew. Yeah, I think that's what it is. That clamp, though, how did they attach that to your head exactly?
I don't remember anything being in my head. I think we just faked it. And it was like, I think I did something like this. And then there was a visual effect. I don't think there was any prosthetic or anything. I don't think so.
They stuck Robbie McNeil.
They did,
because I remember moving your hair out of the way to show that little blinking light on the back of your head.
I don't remember it.
They stuck something on there, I'm pretty sure. You think it was a visual effects, though.
I do. I don't remember getting any kind of prosthetic on my head, but there's a lot of things I don't remember. So that's possible.
Would Dan be able to tell us this? Would Dan Curry know?
I don't know who would remember that. It's such a small detail. Remember that.
It's such a small detail. It is.
We'd have to get a call sheet. So on the call sheet, as some of you patrons have seen, we interviewed Mike Demerit, who was an AD on the show, and he talks about a call sheet and how we our ADs and our production staff would handwrite in the old-fashioned way the call sheet. On the back of the call sheet, when you turn it over, you've got every crew member and department listed and who was there. But you also, on the front side, under special notes or anything, you'd have some of those notes. So if there was prosthetics that day for the head, that probably would have been noted on the call sheet. So that's a way we could find out if it was, somebody could find the call sheet from the shoot, and they exist, they're out there because I've saved some call sheets and I've signed some at conventions over the years. If you look under the special notes in that section where it talks about props and makeups and stunts and things like that, it probably would say like prosthetics that day for, you know, it would probably list that specifically.
Yeah, I tend to think that it was not a visual effect.
Really?
I just recall. Okay. Yeah, I think I remember me having to like, you know, move your hair to show that to camera.
Right.
But it's an interesting idea that this clamp is utilized to increase aggressive tendencies, you know, to increase agitation, which is really, really, you know, something that it is prison control. I mean, not prison, but population control for a prison is if you can increase somebody's agitation and aggressiveness, then they're all going to end up killing each other. So you don't have to really do anything. Just let them do their thing. I think for me, that thinking about that, it just reminds me of during World War II. I don't know if you know this story, but Hitler wanted a drug that would cause his troops to fight.
Oh yeah.
More like berserkers, you know, to be a little bit more violent or aggressive. And so the German pharmaceutical, not pharmaceutical.
No, pharmaceutical is a whole different school of medicine that Tim Russ is very, and Ethan Phillips, I think, went to that medical, the pharmaceutical school. And I think Tim is a doctor in pharmaceutism.
Whatever is the largest pharmaceutical company in Germany, they were the ones that were given that order. And so when they first came up with their first their first trial run of this drug, they gave it to all the Germans, you know, a select sample of German soldiers, and they wanted to see what would happen. And literally 35-40 minutes later, these guys, the exact opposite happened. They weren't violent. They weren't aggressive. They were extremely loving. They were extremely into sensations and whatever. And the drug that they had found was ecstasy, modern day ecstasy, MDMA is what they came up with.
Oh, that's
funny. They gave these, so these German soldiers are sitting there going, wow, your uniform, it feels so soft and wonderful. It's beautiful. And you, I think I love you. I mean, I really do love you, Gunther. You are probably one of the best people I know. No, Manfred, you're the best. I love you. No, I love. So the exact opposite happened.
Anyway, we should have had some MDMA in the shoot. If they had just passed that out instead of these little clamp implants, we would have, well, things would have gotten.
Things would have been different.
Yeah. A whole different kind of situation.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that, you know, we see you trying to work on this pipe thing, this to diffuse the
force field, short circuit that force field. Yeah,
you know, but you're starting to feel the effects of the clamp. We go back to the ship. They're trying to figure out what's going on, and I thought it was interesting that Torres comes up with this paralithium idea that, you know, not only dilithium could be converted, but it could also be paralithium, which I've never heard. Of paralithium before. That's the first time I heard.
Correct.
It. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. And then so there's this other group that's got paralithium that they may be the ones, and we find out eventually later on it is those guys.
Right.
You do successfully disable that force field, right? Well, actually, no. At this point, you don't.
No.
Sorry. At this point, you're testing it. And it
I think it shocks me, right? I get knocked
you
back
or something. Yeah, you don't get killed, but it shocks you. And then other prisoners come in, some of the other guys, they are very suspicious. They want the pipe. They want to see what this is. And this is the scene after the shock where Paris gets in the fight and is stabbed by the Ocraterian. And then Kim has to come in and fight off the rest of them. It's a very cool fight scene, an emotional scene. It's really cool.
It is, but it was very bizarre for me to see how quickly you pulled that knife out. Like the minute he had his knife out, it was like a card trick. Like you had, you know how a magician just pops open and a card comes out of his hand. Like you went boop and boom, this knife just appears out of nowhere. It's like, when did
you be ready in prison?
Get that knife. It was
got to be always ready.
I guess so.
I think Tom Paris was a Boy Scout. He was always prepared. That's the motto.
I suppose. And
always prepared.
That knife fight for me had definite shades of West Side Story going on right there.
Yes,
you know,
it did.
You are getting ready to. And the thing is, you held your own.
It reminded me that knife fight. It reminded me of, I had done a production of Romeo and Juliet at the Ford Theater with the Shakespeare Festival of LA. Mm-hmm. And there was some wonderful choreography in that Romeo and Juliet production where I had a couple of sword fights, but it reminded me of, yeah, like a Shakespearean sort of sword fight or a West Side Story sort of sword fight.
Yeah.
The choreography was kind of cool. It was fun. I love doing stunts like that and fight scenes, and was happy to do it and take the stab there. And then you came in and just fully emotional swinging.
Yeah. And you don't get stabbed by Pitt. You get stabbed by another dude.
Some cheap
random guy.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like, it's, you know, we filmed this so long ago. This is over two decades ago. But then when that guy came in to stab you, I go, I remember that dude. I remember him. I remember his wardrobe was like a surfer's wetsuit, you know, kind of converted into a prisoner, you know, garb, whatever. But I remember that guy. Just little synapses were firing. And I was thinking, I remember that person on set now. Mm. You kind of get the raw end of the deal there. You don't even get stabbed by the main guy. You get stabbed by the backup guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now I have to take you.
Take
back
me over to Don McManus's little house, and we start.
We don't go there first, Robbie. We go back to our own place.
Oh, yeah, we go
first,
back to our place.
And that's when we meet Beans Morocco, and he's taken over our little hovel. And then I got to go to Don McManus's place.
Yeah.
Or Zio. Zio is the character.
We go to Zio's spot. Yeah, we finally get to meet Don's character, Zio. Hmm. And, you know, you want to make a deal. Exchange, you know, your shoes. I think you offer up your shoes. He wants the pipe, and you're like, no, I can't do that.
Yeah.
So anyway, kind of make a deal there with.
Well, I say.
Yeah. What is the deal you made?
Well, we negotiate.
Oh,
back
get
and
out
forth.
Of there!
And finally, I'm saying, I will take you with us.
That's
you
know? Right. That's what it was. I didn't write that down.
Yeah, I can't give you this pipe, man. This is what's going to get us out of here. And then he realizes, oh, these guys have a escape plan. So
yeah,
that's why he agrees to give us shelter and lodging and food. And that food, by the way, those food bricks. It reminds me of there's a TV series right now. What's the name of it? It's about that train, the high speed train in the future.
Oh yeah.
Goes around there. Yeah, they feed the masses food bricks there.
Food bricks.
But those are made out of.
I think food bricks are a common sci-fi trope of a very common sort of go with the manufactured food for the masses that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Soylent Green is a classic example of a. Food for the masses.
Yeah.
So now we go back to, so we make a deal. We go back and we do find the ship that was powered by paralithium, and we meet these two siblings, Vel and Piri, I think.
Yes.
Piri.
And they look nothing alike. There's no way they could be siblings in real life.
Yeah.
Okay.
They don't look anything alike.
No. Vel is from clearly of Scottish or Irish background, probably with the red hair. And
Piri.
And Piri is straight up Mediterranean.
Mediterranean of some kind. Yeah. I thought they were really good though, both those actors. I thought they were really good. I didn't remember them. Obviously, we didn't work with them because we were stuck in prison, but I thought they were really good, both of them.
I think Piri was somebody's niece.
Really?
I kind of feel like this was Ken Biller's niece or something like that. I remember there being a little bit of nepotism going on. Oh, so-and-so just got cast because they're so-and-so's blood relative. And I thought,
interesting.
Which happens. It happens in Hollywood. But she calls Janeway a coward. And I thought, that's very bold of this young lady to direct that coward reference.
The actress.
You looking it up?
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. The actress that played Piri was Rosemary Morgan, is her name. And she is the stepdaughter. She is the stepdaughter of James Cromwell, who was in Star Trek First Contact. Yes.
There you go.
So and she's the daughter of the original series guest star Julie Cobb. So she has a couple of connections to Star Trek. Her stepdad was James Cromwell from First Contact.
There you go.
Mom, Julie Cobb, was a guest star on the original series.
See, look at that. Yeah. I'm pulling that out of my
That was
my
good.
Hat there. Yeah.
She went on to as a, she was very young. She went on to do a lot of other TV shows, but that is Piri. Yeah, that's her.
Yeah. And speaking of guest stars who are related to other people in the Trek world, who's the main Ocotarian guy, Robbie?
Who is it? I can't remember. He looks so familiar. Who is
That's
it?
That's Chris Pine's dad, Robert Pine.
Is it really?
Yeah. Oh, and if you remember, God. Robert Pine was the, he was the commanding officer on Chips. TV series Chips.
Right.
So
right.
Ponch and you know, Poncherelli and John, those guys all reported to Robert Pine. That was their boss.
I didn't look at it. He looked super familiar. I knew I'd seen him on 1,000 things, but I didn't look it up. That's great. That's very cool. Chris Pine's dad.
Yeah, Chris Pine's dad.
Wow.
I like that.
Okay.
So we've got a couple of Trek royalty or lineage Trek people
here, we know.
So
Peary and Vel, they refuse to let Janeway board their ship. That's what Janeway just said to the Ocoteerians, is that they could not board her ship. So fair's fair, I guess. But she does, when they refuse to let her board, she decides to just beam them over.
Beams them,
just picks them up. Snatches them up. They establish through sensor scans that these are the likely bombers, not her, you know, Harry and Tom were not. Mm-hmm. So she beams them over. And they are members of Open Sky.
Yes. At least the brother is, right? So
yes,
the sister seems to be along for the ride. So
Yeah, that's right. He does say that later on. Okay, so we go back to prison and Paris is stabbed and he's starting to get worse. Let's see, Zio explains
the manifesto.
And this is an interesting scene when he's sort of staged in a strange way because he's sort of facing away from you.
I have to say
I think I understand why they did what they did. I'm not sure if it was the right call. They wanted that shot. They wanted the shot of Don McManus's character sort of looking and the round shoot behind him in sort of a Christ-like
halo.
Yes, this sort of wisdom. And I think everything in that scene and the staging and the photography was designed to sort of, you know, amplify that moment with the visual image. And I'm not sure if it was the right choice. It was so self-conscious and so bananas on bananas.
Yeah.
That I feel like it actually distracted from the moment.
I agree with you 1,000% there. Typically, I'm very pleased with what Uncle Les, our director, you know, how he directs. I'm down with whatever shots he decides to use or what camera angles and how he approaches his job as a director. But in that particular scene, I remember how difficult it was for me to try, because I'm, as you can see in that scene, I'm working on the pipe to basically deactivate the force field, and I'm faced away from him. Okay, so I'm looking at the you know, the electronics and trying to rewire everything, and I remember as an actor, I kept thinking, God dang it, how often should I be looking back at at Zio? You know what I'm saying? Because Zio's talking about all this stuff.
Yeah.
Because at one point, I do have some lines to him, and the camera throws focus to me to when I have those lines, but it was so not organic. I remember filming that going, I wish we did this a different way. I really wish we did this a different way. And it was really kind of the means justifying the end, sort of like, we really want this final shot of Zio with the halo. And so we'll do everything we can to push this square peg into this round hole until
I think works. That's what they did. I really do. And the other thing I noticed in this episode, a lot of long extended oners without any coverage. You know, often in a scene, you'll film maybe a wide shot where you see the whole room. You'll film a close-up of one character, a close-up of another character, maybe a tighter two-shot. You'll have a number of shots to cover the scene. So when you edit it, you can change the pace. You can do all sorts of things.
Yeah.
But in this episode, it was handheld.
Yeah.
The whole, everything on the prison ship was handheld, and there wasn't a lot of coverage. A lot of the scenes were oners. There weren't multiple shots to edit with. So you're stuck with, like this scene, Don McManus's manifesto speech and the shot that moves in and creates that Christ-like image, the visual.
Yeah.
And there was no shot of a reaction to you listening or I guess what I'm saying is, they fit everything into that square peg in the round hole for one. They had one option and they went with it, and they didn't shoot anything else. If they had different angles, and for a moment you could have seen, you know, stay in that Christ-like image for a moment, but then get out of it. Like, let it just be a part of the scene, not what the whole scene is structured around.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you really notice the handheld on when the halo is over him. You can see the movement in the camera. And I honestly feel, Robbie, that there is so much debris on the ground, like just junk that they had thrown all over the place. Like typically the camera can be on a dolly, or they can set up, they can build a track. They'll bring, you know, the dolly along. But I feel like there was so much junk on the ground. They were like, you know what? Screw it. We'll just do handheld for everything. We don't even want to mess with having to, you know, build stuff on top of all this crap that's on the ground, and, or clearing it out of the way and then putting it back in.
Yeah, that could have been part of the reason.
Yeah.
I also think back to when we made this, one of the most popular shows in television that was winning all kinds of awards was NYPD Blue. And it was changing the way that people made film and TV shows, because it was all handheld. The NYPD Blue kind of edgy style was very popular. And so I think that I would imagine it was more than just the obstruction of the trash and the set and stuff. I think it was just for that edgy style of like gritty NYPD Blue style, you know, story on the
That makes a lot of sense, because it's true, because when NYPD Blue started doing that, people were like, whoa,
everybody
look this thing is really, this is cutting edge, look how it's all handheld, and it's and it's almost like they were moving for the sake of moving, you know, like it's almost like they, the guy on, you know, whoever the camera operator was, like, okay, I can hold this pretty still, but I'm gonna do a little extra jolty just to get everyone who's watching to feel a sense of like uncomfortability, maybe a little bit of anxiety. I mean, it heightens the tension in a way, you know, when
it's funny
as an audience member.
Yeah, it's funny on NYPD Blue, because I was lucky enough to go shadow over there actually one time.
Really?
And I had expected that the whole show was shot on, you know, cameras up on the shoulder, handheld, and it wasn't actually. It was not on dollies. They were on what's called a fluid head, so it's a head you can pan around any way you want. And they were all on long lenses. And so the dollies would always be drifting and moving. And then the camera operators would be panning and the assistants would be zooming in and changing size. So it actually wasn't handheld, but it did have a lot of, like, the camera was always adjusting and settling and panning over and tightening. And it was more that style than cameras up on the shoulder. I was surprised.
Oh, wow.
I expected that it would be up on the shoulder. So,
right. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So he gives him the manifesto, which basically is saying, like, this clamp is here to drive us crazy and have us kill each other. And if we can sort of Zen meditate and overcome that agitation that they're causing, that we actually can win, that they can't control us. So basically like a very Zen sort of, Buddha sort of vibe that he was manifestoing there. Mm-hmm. And then you finally get the thing shut down. You guys climb up through the air conditioning vents. By the way, at one point, Don McManus is coming around one of the corners. You guys are climbing. And I see it sort of bend and move. And I was like, oh God, they should have braced it. Because it was just, you know, heating and air conditioning ducts. Like, it was not the most sci-fi material to have built a set, and then to have it sort of bending and moving, I was like, oh, that looks a little cheap. But
the bending and moving, you probably saw me as I'm climbing inside of that thing. It was so difficult to climb up that.
Yeah.
Because there was the only way for me to climb up was literally to use my strength to kind of wedge my hands out and my knees out and sort of shimmy. I mean, it was just, the progress was inches at a time. And I was straining so
hard.
Did
they have another set piece that was flatter to film?
The only flat part was at the very top. But everything else was not a complete vertical, but it was
at, like, 45 degrees or very, something.
Even more than 45. It was such a steep incline. And I remember going up in there and I was telling Les, I go, I don't know who built this, but how am I supposed to climb up this thing? Like, I'm supposed to be scurrying up this thing? I mean, come on now. So I utilize, I mean, I just can't even tell you how much force I had to exert just to make it look like I was kind of moving up through that thing. And I just remember being very annoyed that it's built this way. I kept thinking, come on, guys, you know, you could have made this just a little bit easier. Like maybe some indentations where I could help pull my body up.
Yeah, using or
my
something. Hands, you know, yeah.
Something to help. But no, it was just slick. And it was difficult to navigate.
Well, it looked good. It looked good, except for the one moment with Don when it bent and kind of wobbled. And I was like, oh, that looks like a heating vent. But otherwise, it looked really good. I thought the cool shot outside as you're wiping all the soot off was very dynamic. But for me, like I said, but maybe it's because I remember the episode. It didn't surprise me. Like, I knew it was a ship the whole time. It didn't feel like... There was nothing else that felt like underground to me.
To you. Okay.
Yeah. Like in the design or the vibe of it. But so we come back, you come to take care of Paris. He talks about, he had a dream about Megan Delaney, but Paris Megan is Delaney. Dying. And I think a beautifully written scene. I was very proud of what I did in the scene. And I was very, very impressed with what you did. I just thought it was a really great scene all around with turns and good writing and good acting.
Yeah.
If I do say so myself.
It's a moving scene because you can see how you can see the deterioration of Paris's mind. You know what I'm saying? Like he's losing it. I mean, he's close to dying basically. And it's just really, it's an emotional scene to watch. I would definitely say very emotional.
Yeah, it's very emotional. And you see the beginnings of him really, of Paris losing it, where he thinks Harry stabbed him for a moment, almost hits him with the pipe.
Yeah.
And
well, he doesn't realize he was stabbed, right? He was like, what happened to me?
What happened?
He's starting to know.
He doesn't remember. He's starting to lose it. It's very sad. It's just sad.
Yeah. And if you think about it, up until this point, anybody who's watching Voyager, they know that there's Paris and then there's Kim, who is kind of, you know, Paris's sidekick in a way, or Paris sort of mentors Kim in a way, right? He's the big brother to Harry. And then this is the episode where literally now Harry is thrust into this role of being the protector or the big brother, right? So as the introduction of Paris and Kim is basically Paris saving Kim from being swindled by Quark, you know, so there's that that big brother mentality or the big brother, little brother dynamic that is set up very early in Voyager and that continues all through every single episode in season one and season two. And then in season three, in this particular episode, there is a dynamic shift caused by the stabbing of Tom Paris. Now, Kim has to be the one that is looking out for Paris, which is, you know, it's a big change for the characters.
Yeah,
for sure.
Huge.
So Kim now asks the other prisoners to work together.
Yeah.
Since he's found a way out, then they ask him, oh, really? Where? What does it lead to then? And he tells them it's space, and everyone there laughs at him. And he gets a bunch of stuff thrown at him. And that was not fun filming that because literally.
I was going to say, stuff was really hitting you. Like that was.
Yeah, they were throwing everything at me. And I was just, you know, I remember I was thinking, what if something like, you know, like I'm not wearing protective eyewear. Like I could have lost an eye, you know. I mean, it was really up to the precision of, I can't remember who was doing most of the throwing, but you know, let's
Tom
say Morga. Flack,
probably whoever. Tom Morga.
Yeah, Tom Morga.
Tom Morga
Tom
does
Morga's
it all.
Like throwing it. But they were really, whoever did most of the throwing, I have to give them praise for avoiding my eye or any of, you know, anything crucial. Like I, you know, nothing was thrown at my, you know, private areas or my eyes but it was a little unnerving to do that speech and have people just throw stuff at you. That's for sure.
Well, then you go back to your quarters and you walk over and you see Paris has taken apart your pipe.
Oh God. Yeah.
And you were mad. You almost killed so Paris.
I know. Yeah, I remember that was the commercial break was basically me holding that pipe over my head, and they cut to commercial at that point. And
very
if
intense.
You think about it, that's the way out. That's the way out.
Well, that's we come back and Zio's saying, like, you got to kill this guy. He's a drain on your resources. Yeah. Even offers you a knife, you know?
Yeah.
to kill me. And but you refuse. And then Zio throws us out. He's like, well, you got to get out of here. And if you're here, I'll kill you both. If you don't leave, your drain on resources, get out of here.
You know that scene right before me dropping the knife, you know, when I'm holding it right there, that close up on me, I had to sneeze so bad. during that take, this is over 2 decades ago, and I still remember that take. I'm sitting there going, don't sneeze, don't ruin it, don't ruin the take. Just, you know, so when I'm talking, it's a little, it comes off in a really kind of funky way. It's a little odd sounding, and that's because I'm holding back a sneeze the entire time. And I'm like, and I drop the knife, right? I'm like,
oh, by the way, speaking of odd sounding, I want to jump back for a minute. When you ran into the whole group in the prison and you're like, guys, there's a way.
Listen to me.
Yeah, listen to me. And in the wide shots and stuff before we cut in tight, I think you must have looped that in, like ADR recorded dialogue. Because it didn't sound like I had to go back and listen to it. I'm like, was that Garrett? Like, it did not
sound. Oh, you thought it was someone else?
I was like, wait, who is that? And I listened to it 3 times. And I was like, that does not sound like you. Like, it must have been in the mix or in the fact that it was re-recorded, because it just sounded weird. But it was you.
It sounded
weird. I was like, who is that? No clue.
Remember, I'm still getting used to looping too. Remember that? You know, it's like I'm not as much of a veteran as you are.
Season 3, no excuses anymore, dude. No.
All right.
So we go back on the ship, and Janeway's decided she's gonna, you know, trade these prisoners that she's got, these the real bombers for Kim and Paris. And the Ocraterian guy, Chris Pine's dad, he goes, nah. They've been convicted. Nah. Like, that's how it works here. That's how it works. Like, your guys are done. There's no, it doesn't matter what you find. Even if we made a mistake, we don't care.
Yeah.
That's how it works here. And she's like, what? She thought solving this whole thing was going to get her guys out, and they don't work like that. They don't.
Yeah, no, she's going by the books. And the minute she finds out that Chris Pine's dad is like, no, we didn't, even if you have new evidence, doesn't matter. Yeah. We don't care. And that literally sets Janeway off. At that point, she's like, oh yeah? Okay. If you're going to play that way, all right. I'll play tough with you. Well, you'll see how I'm going to respond to that. Great plan though. Take Neelix's ship, not Voyager, because Voyager is going to be scrutinized by the Ocraterian patrol ships. Mm-hmm. And they jump in Neelix's ship, and Neelix is able to show us a little bit of his razzle dazzle in piloting that ship of his. And I seem to recall that his ship looked different than that. I thought it was compact. I thought it looked different too. I was like, wait, this is kind of elongated. Is that how his ship is? I thought it was more of a, you know, more of a vertical orientation and sort of a horizontal orientation of that ship. Mm. So it looked a little different. So I don't know.
All I know is she takes Neelix's ship over there, and the next thing you know, she's sliding down in that beautiful backlight with a phaser rifle in her hands, looking like a badass, taking down prisoners and rescuing Tom and Harry. So that was kind of cool. She slid down the slide.
Tuvok does.
Tuvok comes sliding down. Neelix is up there trying to stall with the Ocraterians.
Yeah.
He's very funny.
Did you mention earlier, I'm going to go back for a second. Did you mention that there were only 50 prisoners in there? Is that what you said earlier?
That's what Tom says. I made a note. Like, Tom says this to Harry, we're underground and there's 50 other prisoners. And obviously he's wrong about everything. They're not underground. There's a lot more than 50 prisoners, but that's what Tom thinks. Yeah. Oh, you know, in the beginning, we're just down here in this small place underground, like being held.
Right. The other thing I want to, you've kind of glossed over is the whole, this man is my friend, nobody touches him scene. Mm-hmm. That scene when they're looking, you know, at you and just salivating over your shoes and your clothes and everything. This was the famous scene where, as I'm like, you know, kind of waving them off, I stepped on you.
I stepped on you by mistake.
And I remember Robbie, I knew that I stepped on you because obviously, you know, that I heard you go, you made a grunting sound and I know that it wasn't the trash or debris on the ground, and that it was, I don't know if I stepped on your leg, your thigh, your hand, whatever it was, But when Les Landau yelled out "cut," that's when you said from the ground, because you're on the ground, I hear a voice and it's you, and you said, "I hate not being the hero."
I know. I like to be the one that's out there fighting, and
yeah.
I don't want to be like suffering and dying and getting stepped on. I know.
Oh, so I want to apologize to you. And 26 years later, I'm so sorry, buddy, that I stepped on you.
This happens. Okay, things happen in life, especially in action scenes like that. Yeah, we go back on the ship, and there's Tom and Harry in sick bay, and Harry seems haunted. You know, Paris seems to be kind of recovered pretty good, but
yeah.
Harry seems to feel a lot more guilt, a lot more. He's just he's a little bit haunted and
he's worried, and or he's stressed about, concerned. Yes. Yeah, what could have been is what it was, right?
The aggressiveness, the violence, the all of that he felt in himself for the first time and saw in himself. Mm-hmm. And it's a side of himself that I don't think he had ever really experienced before. And it's scary. Mm-hmm. And I think one reason Paris could maybe get over that a little quicker and even says to him, like, you know what I remember? Someone saying, this man is my friend. No, nobody touches him. I'll remember that for a long time. I think Paris's ability to go, yeah, there's a lot of violence there. I see it. I was triggered by it. But I think Paris had experienced that before, whereas Harry, it was like the innocent kid who experiences that monster inside of him, that warrior inside of him for the first time.
Yeah,
is affected by it, and so it was harder for him to just recover so quickly. But it was nice.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, that was really a bit of PTSD setting in. You know what I'm saying? It's just he's never been in a situation like that ever. Yeah. And especially in a situation where his best friend has been mortally wounded by a knife, you know, you've been stabbed and you're literally on your last gasp of life. And so it was super, super stressful for Kim.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
For sure. Did you have a theme for this episode?
I was going to let you go and then I'd riff off of you.
Okay, I got this. I would say for me, the theme is kind of summed up, you know, my perspective on theme. It's kind of summed up in that line that I just mentioned where Tom says, you know what I remember? I remember someone saying, this man is my friend, nobody touches him. Mm-hmm. I think the lesson is that love wins, like not violence. That in the end, you know, love wins. That what Tom remembers is the loving part of the memory, not the violence. That love will win in the end. And that, you know, Janeway's love and care for Harry and Tom won. She found a way to win and get, you know, and save us. Because of love, not because of the hate that these Ocrotyrians had for locking people up and, you know, those kind of hate-fueled, negative, destructive kinds of choices don't win. So anyway, love wins.
That's a good theme/lesson for this episode. I'm going to go with a more comedic theme/lesson, and that is when faced with extreme conditions or dire straits, just talk about food to get your mind off of it. Because we do that a lot in this episode.
We do. We
to the point that we could compile our own Delta Quadrant cookbook, just like Neelix has a
just
cookbook.
From this episode.
From this episode.
So many meals.
That's good true. Lord, we talked about food in multiple scenes. So, and in the very end, we talked more about food. So we had a nice steak dinner. So that's going to be my comedic theme.
All right.
Good thing. Man.
Well, great. Well, that was a great recap. What is, Do you know what next week is? We've got another episode for next week. Let's all take a look.
Let's take a look.
It is The Swarm.
The Swarm. Okay.
The Swarm is season 3, episode 4. That'll be our rewatch and recap for next week. Thanks for joining us for our season 3 very special episode, The Shoot, with the Delta Flyers. It was great to rewatch and remember this. Thanks for sharing that with us.
And for all of you Patreon patrons, stay tuned for your bonus content. Bye, guys.